This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. 9 Jewish activists attempted to run the Israeli blockade of the Gaza Strip back in September. Their small boat carried some humanitarian aid, but its mission was the message, Israeli treatment of Palestinians is wrong. Israeli commandos intercepted the boat. The official story is that they faced no resistance and used no violence, but according to the activists, that was just a story. The activists say they resisted peacefully, but the commandos subdued them with tasers. This is part of the continuing saga in Israel. The previous May, a Turkish boat tried to run the Gaza blockade. It was intercepted by Israeli Marines. 9 activists died in the ensuing violence. These stories raise the question, what makes a person risk harm to bring aid to Palestinians on the Gaza Strip? Glenn Secker, and Reuven Moskovitz know something about that. Glenn was the captain of the Jewish aid boat that ran the blockade in September. Reuven is an 82-year-old Holocaust survivor. He was a passenger on Glenn's boat, and they're both in this area to talk with local religious groups and here on the program today. Welcome, both of you. Good to have you here.
Hi, thank you.
Glenn, tell us how you got involved in this trip.
Try to keep it very short because it's a bit convoluted. But I'm a member of, I'm on the executive committee of an organization in the UK called Jews for Justice for Palestinians. And we were involved with the, we're part of an umbrella group, a European organization, European Jews for Just Peace. And the German group, started to organize a boat, and they got a loan on it, and we started the whole campaign off, and then the Marmara was attacked, and people killed, and there's a big demonstration in London and to condemn the killings, and we participated in that, and I spoke for that, and then I said, by the way, we're sending a Jewish boat to Gaza. Watch this space. And that just got the world's publicity, the world's media really interested. But the bank that was providing the loan for the German boat pulled out when they realized what they got themselves into. And so we'd had an emergency fundraising amongst our organization, got the money in 10 days to buy another boat, and off we went.
So Reuven, why did you join this flotilla of one?
I joined this because as a child, when we were closed in a ghetto, we were deported, and we were closed 5 years. I remembered all the time that we had a great person, Hillel, and he told, if you want to understand what is the core of Judaism, don't do to your neighbor what you are hating. And I asked myself, why am I suffering? Why do my neighbors hate me? And I swore that if I'll be happy and be back in the country of our ancestors, I'll never do to my neighbors what the neighbors did to me. And so when I heard about that boat, the Jewish boat, and I'm very, very revolted because of the closing of 1.5 million people in Gaza in terrible conditions. And there are also 800 children. I immediately applied to be accepted, to be there. Although I'm 82 years old, but it was worthwhile for me to take the risk in order to symbolically to give an example that that's the way I protest against the injustice to the Palestinians.
But Glenn, this blockade was imposed back in 2007 when Hamas took control of that area. Hamas, which has perpetrated violence against Israel, the Israelis say it's a matter of national security. Hamas has proved that it will use violence against the Israeli state, and this is one way to protect Israel.
The international law states that any country has the right to self-defense, but that under that law it must be proportional. Now, Israel has intentionally reduced 1.5 million people in Gaza to subsistence level, intentionally to keep them just above the breadline. It's a collective punishment, which is illegal in international law. And they have attacked Gaza a number of times, at least three times before the attack of Cast Lead, killing in each occasion hundreds of people. But in when they attacked on the Cast Lead, they killed about 1,500 people, something like a quarter of them children, and most of them civilians. And basically we say that this is not in our name. As Jews in our organization, we do not want to be associated with this. We want to say that we stand up for human rights and human justice. In fact, Hamas have continually sought to negotiate. There have been contacts with the Israelis under the counter, so to speak, historically. It's now recognized by many people, even many of the speakers at the J Street conference here in Philadelphia, I think it was last weekend, saying that Hamas wants to be a normal group that wants to be involved in governmental discussions. And you have to speak to your enemies. There's no point in negotiating with your friends.
Reuven Moskovitz, tell me what you think what purpose is served by this symbolic gesture.
The main purpose for me is to try to change the narrative that there is only one-sided violence. As a matter of fact, it's there's no asymmetry between the violence we are using against the Palestinians and the Palestinians. I don't have any reason to be enthusiastic about the Hamas, and I would like to see a Palestinian state with open-minded groups. But the Hamas are part of the Palestinian people. They are oppressed. They are suffering. And somehow, I think in the last times, they also decided that it's time to share maybe the power if it will come to a Palestinian state. Anyhow, I really, for me, it was very important just because it was the boat had to go and the times between Rosh Hashanah, I don't know if you know, the Rosh Hashanah, it's our New Year, and Yom Kippur. There are the 10 days of repent. And in those days, the 10 days, you, a Jew, a believing Jew or a self-conscious Jew, he must to try to reconciliate his enemy, not only enemy, his neighbor. And that's a holy, even for a secular Jew. And I thought that's a good opportunity to come to our enemies, to tell them. In our tradition, there is a Talmudic word that a hero is not someone killing his enemy, but a hero is someone who is trying again and again, making his enemy to a friend. And, you know, someone told me that I'm an old person who's like a child. And I hoped that if we should come to Gaza, we should be able to speak to them and to tell them, listen, for more than 60 years we are killing each other. Enough, it's enough. There is time to stop. There's time to begin a new narrative, a new attempt to live together.
Glenn, what happened when you were boarded? Tell us about the trip itself.
Yeah. Well, we were worried that we would be tracked by Mossad and stopped before we arrived there. So we had this long sort of water mitty experience of trying to keep ourselves below the radar, mm-hmm. which was rather funny because we're all amateurs and up against Mossad would be rather funny. But we finally got out of Famagusta in Cyprus, making our way across, and we're waiting for the sight of the Israeli Navy. And finally, a frigate arrived on the horizon. We're in a 9.7-meter boat, little catamaran, most of us over 60.
How many people?
9. Mm-hmm. And this whole frigate arrives, and they warn us, they get in radio contact, and they say we can't, they ask us where we're going, and we tell them, and they say you can't go there. And we say, excuse me, we're in international waters, we're a British flagged boat, British law pertains on our boat, we are unarmed, we are passive, we believe in passivity, we're not going to fight in any way. But we are taking aid to Gaza, and we request safe passage. And they come back and they say, you can't go to Gaza. If we stop you, it may be dangerous for your passengers and damaging for your boat. And we say, you have no right to stop us under international law, and we proceed. And finally, they launch from the frigate, I think, two gunboats, two high-powered landing crafts, and four ribs, which are inflatable boats with rigid bottoms and high-powered outboards on them. And there was a sight that I will never forget, which was seeing these fanning out from either side of the frigate in the sunshine, bow waves glistening in the sun. And I thought, is this a movie or is this real? I had pinched myself. And they were up, they were going very fast, and they reached us very quickly. And then the commander talked to us over the megaphone, giving us the same warning. So we repeated our legal rights. And then Itamar, because we had on board two refuseniks, people who built Competence for Peace, having retired, come out of the army on conscience grounds. And we had Rami Elhanan, who built the bereaved family's circle, who are people who have Palestinians and Israelis who have lost close relatives in the bombing. He lost his daughter in a suicide bombing in Jerusalem, who have said nothing will change until we talk. And we have Reuven, our Holocaust survivor, and two others, an American Shoah survivor, Lillian Rosengarten, and Edith, a Jew living in Germany, who became a Jew by conversion, which is very significant. And Itamar then called across to the people in the commandos in the boat and said, "You're breaking international law. You could be arrested outside Israel. Don't do it." Then they closed in and they boarded us from port side and starboard side, a rib on each side, three commandos, each on each side. Each one of them had a taser gun, the high powered electric shock gun. And they prized me off the wheel, and they got hold of Itamar first, and they dragged him backwards into their, across the safety wires into their rib. And I learned later from his testimony that they pushed their fingers deep into his jugular artery. And luckily, he had the presence of mind to go floppy rather than to panic, so they released the pressure, or he could have been brain damaged. And then they went for Yonatan, who had been a helicopter pilot in the Israeli Air Force, and they fired a taser gun twice into his shoulder. He was just linked arms with Rami. He wasn't fighting or anything. And then they moved his life vest off his left breast, put the taser gun directly onto his heart, and fired it, which is illegal in most of the states in the United States because it can result in death. He went rigid. He described it as having an epileptic fit. And I saw him, the force of his muscles going rigid, threw him across the corner of the cockpit with a terrible cry of pain. And then they dragged him off to the boat as well, took them both off to the frigate and then off to Israel. And they were never charged with anything. So there was no legal reason for them to treat them in that way.
And those are pretty serious conditions. Was anyone seriously hurt or suffer a lasting injury?
No, we were very lucky that they could. They didn't know Yonatan's heart condition, but they could have killed him. Luckily, they didn't. And luckily, Itamar knew how to behave in that situation, and he wasn't hurt. The rest of us were treated very carefully because, as a Jewish boat, we were presenting a severe embarrassment to the Israeli government. And so they treated us very cautiously.
Reuven, what effect do you think this has had?
Listen, my only contribution to that enterprise was my proposal to react like we did it. And again, maybe I'm very naive, I proposed if they will attack us, we shall link each other, and I will play the harmonica, and I will play just what I'm going, if it's possible.
I'll let you, but that harmonica, there's a story behind that harmonica,
yeah,
isn't
there? Yeah, there's a story. It's a very, I was a soldier in the Six-Day War. And I was supposed to keep the curfew on the streets of Ramallah. And again, I'm not able to forget the times when I was closed. And I saw some children. They were very, very sad. And I must confess that I wasn't a happy conqueror. It was very, very sad for me to see those children. And I saw myself. And I gave them from my emergency stuff, chocolate. And so they came to me and brought their father. It's a long story, but when I left again on the streets, the two girls followed me and asked me, Hawaja, Hawaja, and one of them gave me flowers. And one of them gave me a harmonica, a Chinese harmonica, with the name Hero. And then I remembered that a hero is someone who is making his enemy to friend. And for me, immediately, at the beginning, I thought that I was the hero, but the children, they were, I was a soldier, I was with helmet, I was a gun. And they gave me that harmonica. And therefore, it was so important for me that I began by myself to play harmonica.
I'm going to have to close out the show right now. I may leave you a few seconds here at the end, depending on how much time we have. But I want to thank you, Reuven Moskovitz, a survivor of the Holocaust, a passenger on Glenn's boat, Glenn Secker, captain of the Jewish boat, aid boat that tried to run the Israeli blockade of the Gaza back in September. They're going to be an Apex tonight at 7 o'clock at the Apex Mosque. They're going to be in Chapel Hill tomorrow, 7:30, Community Church of Chapel Hill Unitarian Universalist. Then in Raleigh Thursday, 7:30, St. Francis of Assisi Church. And for more details, you can go to peace-with-justice.org. That's the state of things for today. Thank you for listening. This is North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Here's Reuven Moskovitz on the harmonica to play us out.